back on the Rule of Three. Tim Slagle, Brian Miller over on the other side.
Hello.
And it's Tuesday, September 27th. And if you remember, by the time this gets posted, last week we had the presidential debates. It was the first debate. It was the much anticipated debate, the first meeting between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And
the most anticipated debate that you can remember?
That I can remember. Yeah. Can you think of a better one?
I was trying to think of it, but I mean, Donald Trump, say what you will about Donald Trump, he has definitely made the debate, probably for worse, into more of a World Wrestling Federation style spectator sport.
Exactly.
Which inherently drums up sort of prurient, lurid interest. And so pitting that against the old guard definitely had an interesting, yeah.
Yeah,
it's always hard to match that.
It's you know, most of the times the debates are always just wonk fests.
They don't usually call each other racist and crazy and whatnot openly. You know, that usually, like, usually it's kind of genteel, like white glove slap style insults. You know, and I said good day, sir. It's usually the debate dig.
Yeah, it's the people who get so excited about the debates, I think, are the people that don't care about Super Bowl or the Oscars. That remaining segment, that remaining slice of the American demographic, actually looks forward to the debates. This one, that slice was quite large, and I've probably mentioned it before. I've been doing a series of shows called Campaign 2016, which you know, people have called a lot of different names incorrectly. It's and I've never complained about that.
Yeah, well,
I don't care.
That's the nature of a pun, right?
As long as you mention my show at Zany's, fourth Monday of every month. I've been doing it all year. We got one more before the election. And then we got a wrap up that we're doing Thanksgiving week. So there's just two more. But this one happened to fall the fourth Monday, which would have been my regular showcase at Zany's, happened to fall on the very night of the first debate. And it kind of left us with a conundrum. So I sat down and talked with Zany's, and I said, what are we going to do? Because, you know, anybody who's interested in politics is going to be home watching the debates. And you know, anyone interested in comedy isn't going to, you know, just comedy isn't going to want. And then there's football, too. We got football going on as well.
It was a rough night to do stand-up comedy at a regular show. I didn't go to Acme last night because I was at the debates, but I wonder. I mean, I'm sure they're Acme. I'm sure they still managed to have somehow 125 people.
But it's not a, you know, the Acme.
It wasn't going to be a sellout night.
The Acme open night is not a show that's advertised as being a political comedy show.
Oh, no, it's doubly deadly for you. Yeah. Everybody who would possibly be interested in your show would inherently be watching something else.
So we came up with this idea of actually just running the debate. And we figured, you know, the way we pitched it to the media was that there's been nothing quite as funny this campaign as the actual candidates, is that they are actually outdoing us. And I think we've discussed it before, is that you can't parody a parody.
Mm-hmm.
So we just decided just to pull down the screen and run the debates and get a bunch of comics just let them riff on the debates. And that's what we did last night. And it was, I have to say that it was a spectacular turnout. We had, it was sold out, very close to sold out, if not sold out. You know, we had to eat a few seats so we could get the projection equipment in there and stuff. Zany's doesn't actually have that facility. I had to actually, had to go out shopping for a DVR. Because Zany's I don't think they have a DVR in the house, or they didn't have a cable connection down. I don't remember the actual problem, but I had to go out shopping for a DVR so that, you know, because everyone, show times, especially on the weeknights, rarely start on time.
Sure.
So, you know, we couldn't ask people to be there at 7:30, the show didn't start till at least 8:15. And of course I wanted to introduce the show. So we had to pause it.
Oh, interesting. And then you watched it slightly out of real time.
Slightly out of real time, but we all watched it together, slightly out of real time.
Oh, and 15 minutes out of real time.
Really. And it also gave us the ability, we played bingo.
Oh, that's fun. Like debate, like if when he says tweet or she says deplorable or whatever.
Exactly. We had a list of about 100 words and one of the comedians, Amanda Cohn, put together some bingo cards. She had them printed up and she said that she found that Excel had a randomizer function where it would print out separate pages with all the words in different orders. So that all the cards were different.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, and so there were words like casino and Mexico and proud American was the free space. because that was pretty much a given. And Benghazi, wall, and you know, just words that were foundation, just words that we knew were going to be brought up, and everyone that was in got a card. And the first big prize was a rubber Donald Trump mask.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty good prize.
Very appropriate. And going to be handy for at least the next, well, you know, normally you'd say for the next, say, 30, 31 days.
As
we crawl toward Halloween. But in reality, you get a bonus week plus on that one. God forbid he wins. It could save you from some sort of crisis. When you're fleeing in the purge, you could put that on and see if people...
Well, the funny part about the mask was it obviously made in China.
Of course.
and it didn't say Donald Trump mask. It said fun billionaire mask. This was the title on it. So it was kind of funny because I kind of pulled it out and it looked like it was made of skin. And I said, and this is... our grand prize has been provided by the God of Many Faces.
Oh, nice.
And then I show the title and say, see, a candidate has no name.
That's pretty. Plus, I'm sure it probably looked about as lifelike as Donald Trump's face.
Yeah, it actually looked like what he peels off when he's done with his television appearance. Exactly. So not only was the crowd sold out, we got a lot of enthusiasm in the media. We were being cycled on News Radio 78, the story that we were going to do it. And that, I think that's what sold out the show, was when they started, you know, people are like, what are we going to do? And then that started cycling. So people started calling up. It was, nice. It was fantastic. And, WGN TV. Actually showed up to make it a segment on the evening news.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was fantastic. And here's the funny thing. They didn't tell us until the last minute. So I'm figuring out how to set up the DVR and the best signal, because we're just using an antenna, came over the UHF because of all the buildings in Chicago. For some reason, the UHF. And then I didn't have to pull up the rabbit ears. I could just use one of those round antennas. Mm-hmm. So we watched the debate on Fox 32. And it's like, well, that's what you get for not telling us you're coming in.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, it would have been the WGN, of course. I don't even know if they covered it. Go ahead.
I'm doing a similar thing, like a debate riffing thing with Andrew Lee and John Justice for the second debate. Any advice in terms of execution, you know, and how difficult is it to sneak in jokes there amongst so much talking?
Well, here's the thing, and here's what I found, is I segmented into two, to right and left. I had the Hillary supporters on the left, of course, and then the Trump supporters on the right.
Mm-hmm.
And what the mistake I made is that when everyone was at their funniest is when they were making fun of their own candidate.
Oh, sure, I agree. Yeah,
because then it was just a quick in and out. When they tried to make fun of the other candidate, there was a tendency to rant and rail, And that's just wrong, Donald Trump. You should be paying your taxes because there's thousands of, it's like, you know, okay, that's not really a joke.
Right, because you got to get in there quick because it's, you know, speaking of, we got to wrap this up in a second, but I'm a big fan of Mystery Science Theater 3000. And when I interviewed some of those guys for an article I wrote about it, they all talked about you had to pick certain movies because you couldn't pick a really talky movie because they were trying to joke over it. And they liked movies that had some silent stretches and good pauses.
Yeah. Yeah.
And well, the nature of a debate is it does not have much of that.
Well, what happened was everyone loved it at the beginning. We were getting laughter and applause. Mm-hmm. By the end of the show, people were shushing us. They didn't even want us to say anything.
Well, then the debate was really heating up at that point, too.
Yeah, exactly. So they were shushing us. And one final thing I would like to mention, the randomizer function does not work so well.
Oh, you got a bunch of...
We got six winners at once. Fortunately, thanks to comedian Dale Irvin, he brought in a bunch of CDs.
And
he's got little notepads with eyes printed on them that he calls iPads. So we handed out some iPads and got some tickets for the show, which is Zany's free passes for future shows that we handed out. And so fortunately, yeah, we were able to cover all six. But yeah, if you're going to play bingo, you might want to randomize it by hand.
Randomizer by Hand is the name of my first album. And I'm going to channel my own inner Lester Holden and say, sir, you are out of time. And we've been talking about... Tim's show on the debate, but we haven't talked about the debate itself overall. You obviously got a chance to watch it while you were riffing it. Did you get a chance to kind of take it in while you mocked it?
Yeah, I did. Oh, there was actually something. Another thing I was going to mention that was kind of funny because we were just getting it over the air, and I think what happened. I'm trying to piece what happened, but towards the end, it started pixelating and it started skipping as digital TV is wont to do.
Yes.
And it was like, well, what the hell happened? Because I was watching it. I started it in the afternoon and I made sure that there was no skipping all afternoon. It was fine. And it was, all I can think of what might have happened is that a lot of people, as they were getting, because it was towards the end, a lot of people were getting bored and started... Started getting their phones out, yeah.
Maybe all the TV equipment in there didn't
No,
help.
The TV equipment was gone by then.
Oh.
And it was just people, so that's what I'm thinking, is that their phones created interference. That's all I can figure. But the funny part about it was... is people are screaming, fix the antenna. And it's like, you don't understand. This is a DVR.
Oh, yeah. This is a recording. Oh, that's right.
The only way I can fix the antenna is with a time machine.
Yeah.
If I were to teleport myself 20 minutes ago, and then the manager comes up to me and goes, the debate ended 5 minutes ago. There's nothing you can do.
So you missed the last 15 minutes.
Not so much. It kind of skipped. It kind of gave us an opportunity to try to stick a few more jokes in because we had some blank screen. We had some downtime, but we pretty much saw the whole thing. So yeah, I was able to take it in. I was able to. It was enjoyable. I might add, the candidates actually had better lines than the comics, as predicted. The candidates got some really good laugh breaks and some applause breaks even.
Yeah, what were the biggest lines from the candidates that you recall, that you thought?
I didn't take notes. your take?
I watched it with the wife, and who's sort of more emotionally invested in it, I guess, than I am.
Uh-huh.
So I had her kind of intensity next to me. I thought, to me, it started off favoring Trump quite a bit. I thought the first chunk of it favored Trump, just because he was kind of subdued and he was doing well on trade, and he was sticking the message pretty well, and then he just started to slip, and he started to lose it and get angry. And I thought the biggest mistake that she made was overplaying her delight slash, you know, if I was an NFL referee, I would have flagged her 15 minutes or for 15
smug.
Yards
for 15 yards for smug,
you know, illegal celebration, what do they call it? Illegal celebration or whatever. When you throw your helmet down and do a break dance in the end zone, there's certain things you can't do. And I thought she was dancing in the end zone just a little more. Because, like, I thought the more that he became kind of angry and slipped, it just contrasted her being calm. And I thought, it's like, the way to win that is not to revel in his downfall, but to just keep being calm.
Yeah.
Just be the contrast.
Yeah.
And so it was like, she baited him well early, I thought. And she was pretty attacky. And I thought she was coming off pretty attacky. Centric in the beginning, where he was not.
Yeah, it definitely switched.
I think also
what happened is kind of what it reminded me of, is that in the old days in comedy, I don't know if it's so much anymore, but when you would see like a guy from LA and New York work the road, a comic would they would open with their 5-minute television set. And even if it hadn't been on television, they're still working on their 5-minute television set.
Yeah.
Cause that's what you do and did in LA and New York in the days before YouTube. You would go to the clubs and you'd do your 5-minute television set. So the comics would do their they'd go on the road, they'd do their 5-minute television set and kill.
Oh yeah. Interesting.
And then, it would degenerate to, where are you from? Any birthdays? Anybody celebrating anything?
Yeah, it's like, only were they not built for a long set, but
they would muddle through the rest of their show. And I kind of think that's what happened to the Donald. I think he had all the economic issues well planned out and prepared, and I think towards the end, he ran out of rehearsed material.
Yeah, and I think the thing that kind of undid Trump a little bit last night and could potentially undo him overall in the debates is the most pathological thing about him, as far as I can tell, is his complete inability to think about anything outside of himself. He's the most self-obsessed human being I think we've ever come across. It was a really great story I heard from this journalist who said that they spent like half an hour on a plane talking about Donald Trump early in his candidacy, and they interview him for like half an hour about his campaign, and he just talks and talks and talks and talks, and finally he leans back and he goes, whew, okay, enough about me. So what do you think my chances are in the debates? And I think that sums up Donald Trump. I mean, he is an egomaniac beyond all egomaniacs that we've ever seen. And I think it does not suit him to just talk about himself for an hour and a half. And I think she kind of tricked him into it. And I think if he could, at the beginning, he was talking about stuff that was outside of himself, and it did make him look relatively more like a real candidate. But then, you know, he just couldn't help himself. And once he fell down the birther rabbit hole, you know, whatever it was.
Well, that was kind of a setup by Lester Holt, too. I mean,
how so?
Well, were there questions about why Hillary destroyed her email server?
He absolutely asked her about the email server.
He didn't actually ask. He didn't ask a strong question about it.
Here's the thing: you don't have to ask a strong question about the birther thing, because I mean, you can't. Donald Trump's entire political life was based on the birther theory so strongly, and for him to just say that he never supported it, it's one thing for him to say,
"Yeah,
okay, now I believe the president," but for him to so outright lie and say, "I never supported that," is so outlandish that you don't need a strong question for it. You just ask it, and he has no answer.
You're right, but that's a bad example. But it doesn't really.
I do think the questions felt a little easier for Hillary than Trump. But then I also think part of that was that she was doing a really good job of bringing up She was doing a good job of bringing up a lot of his problems, which then redirected the follow-ups. Whereas he did a weirdly bad job. He never brought up Benghazi. He never brought up the Clinton Foundation. He never brought up a lot of stuff and put it into the fray.
No, that's a good point.
And because a lot of the stuff, that the harder questions came in the follow-up.
He brought up the emails once. He said that he'll release his tax returns when she releases those 33,000 emails she deleted.
Yeah, so Lester would on the follow-up say, well, what about that? And so a lot of those came from her just bringing it up better. And I think he just didn't do a good job of.
Yeah, and he didn't follow up. He didn't follow up well on that either. She said, you know, I made a mistake. And then it was just kind of dropped. It's like, well, no. Setting up a private server is not a mistake.
I feel like substantially, I thought that was a very unsatisfactory answer.
Right.
And rhetorically, I thought it was a really effective answer.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it takes the momentum out of it.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, I think kind of style points on that one, but I agree with you. That's like, well, that's no, a mistake is when you call your buddy's wife Sarah instead of Jane because his ex-wife's name was Sarah or whatever. You know? That's
a mistake. Yeah. Sleeping with her is not a mistake.
Sleeping with her is not a mistake. Yeah, exactly. There's some levels here. But I thought, obviously I'm no professional by any stretch, but if I was Donald's debate prep coach, I would tell him, you got to bring up her negatives way more. You got to put those out there, which is going to be harder to do in the second one because it's a town hall, but more in the third one. And if I was Hillary's people, I would say, you did a pretty good job, but like, don't.
Scratch the touchdown dance.
Yeah. Just don't do quite so much laughing about, you know, just, I mean, I think when she's like raising her eyebrows, it's fine, but like, just don't do quite so much laughing and just be like, well, that's what he chooses to do. He chooses to be crazy. I choose to talk about policy. And I think in a weird way, her being a little bit more boring will be the best thing she could do.
Yeah. But I think the problem is, and you touched on it right there, is you're saying that Donald Trump is the most self-obsessed person to ever seek the office. And I totally disagree with that. I think everybody that has ever sought the office has been self-obsessed.
Oh, I agree, but I literally, but nobody more so than Donald Trump. It's
No, basically, he is the first candidate who has had no ability to hide.
Well, I agree. I think his level of self-obsession extends to that point. That's what I think it is, his self-obsession that extends beyond everybody else's that makes him incapable of hiding it.
And I think probably for some people, they see that as honesty.
Yeah. Anyway, and honestly, we're out of time for this segment, so we'll be back with one more. So let's hear it for me.
And we're back on the final segment of the Rule of Three. This is the debate show. This is actually, I think this might be one of the first Rule of Threes that we've actually had some semblance of a theme through the entire show. When we originally pitched the idea, we thought we would do that.
I think we tried to do that, if you recall, at the beginning, and then found it was so much better to just do the three segments, you know, pop culture, the news, and the comedy, as I recall. But I like the occasional theme, and since we like to tease stuff live on air, I think we definitely got to do a Halloween theme show here coming up soon.
Absolutely,
I've got the Halloween fever already. It's coming on now that I'm a homeowner. I got places to put Halloween crap.
Now that I think about it, I just realized that last week we teased the campaign bet.
Oh, we still have that's an evolving thing. We got plenty of time on that because that's going to get paid off. But yeah,
okay. For our regular listeners, we're sorry if you're disappointed, but no, we haven't come up with a bet yet.
I think it should be something to the effect of like, I'll come out to one of your shows, and either you have to say I was right, or I have to say you were right on stage, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. I'll actually be on the Acme stage the night after the debate, so that's probably where the bet will take place.
Yeah, so I could come out and hang out, and I should be in town that week, and I'll come hang out and we'll talk about it.
To put a final cap on the debate, one thing I noticed is that they And I don't know why. I guess maybe time constraints. But wouldn't you think if there was any place where the national anthem should be played is before a presidential debate?
That is a fantastic point, actually.
What does a football game have to do with national pride other than the fact that we live in a country where you can pay $100 for a hot dog and a beer?
It's so funny. I think the whole sanctimony over the national anthem and the flag has to be diminished by the fact that Budweiser now has flags on their cans and they're calling their beer America. I mean, I think we've jumped whatever red and white and blue stripe shark there is.
Well, actually, it's maybe it's a way to attract more voters over to Trump because, you know, I tried a can of it and, ooh, I'd like someone to make America great.
Ooh, very nice. But yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, I don't think they do that at the State of the Union.
No, I don't think any government function actually, you know, other than maybe. I don't even think at memorial services they play the anthem. I think they play they play other more somber tunes.
Yeah, I'll let it go with the memorial service, but at the very least, if every day of kindergarten I had to get up and say the stupid Pledge of Allegiance, I think they should have to say the stupid Pledge of Allegiance. I mean, they're on the dime. I'm paying in. They're getting cash money. They should pledge the hell out of that thing.
So what that leads to is that apparently they're still playing the anthem at football games all over America. And
sporting events, all of them, you know, baseball, maybe not soccer. Do you think in soccer, do they play like this, honest question, in hockey, if there's a Canadian team involved, they play O Canada and the national anthem. If they're in Canada and there's an American team involved, they play both. In soccer, do they do like, do they play the national anthem and they play like, you know, O Mexico or whatever the Mexican national anthem is? Mexico. I don't know.
I don't know what the Mexican national anthem is. I don't. And that's not racist. That's nationalist. Okay.
It's interesting. I just realized that I don't know what it is. But I wonder if they do that like, you know, they play like international, like North American soccer matches. I wonder if they do that or do they not play national anthems at all?
I know at the Olympics, they play the national anthems of the winners.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is actually interesting. You know, it seems to me if you if you win a gold and if America wins a gold and a silver, shouldn't they play the anthem twice?
I agree. Or they should. No, you know what they should do? They should turn the volume up with each one. So like the gold medal winner, it's kind of faint, you know, or the bronze. The silver medal winner, you can hear it. And then they blare the winners, you know, turn it up to 11.
Yeah, and it's usually American. So after they're done with the North Korean national anthem, a drum roll. And just bam, 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 bam. Yep, perfect.
Yep. Do you think after the Olympics, do you think all those various countries' anthems is like Christmas music to you? Like you've heard it so much for 2 weeks that you just want to scream? I went all year and didn't hear this, and now I've heard it a million times.
That's actually probably the one of the most frantic moments is when like Latvia wins a medal. They have to find someone who knows the sheet music for the Latvian national anthem.
find an accordion player with some castanets. We got to play the Latvian national anthem, the Dr. Doom symphony. It's actually Latveria, but I've always liked how Latvia and Latveria were so close. That's Latveria, if you don't know, is the home country of Dr. Doom, Victor Von Doom in the Marvel universe.
Okay. I did not know where you're going with that.
The
reason why we started talking about this before we wandered off is that apparently now high school and college students are refusing to stand up for the national anthem. Is that entire teams in high school are taking a knee during the national anthem, which I don't even see how that's a protest. To be honest with you, that taking a knee, sitting on the bench, yeah, that's kind of a protest. It's like, I ain't even going to stand up for this crap. Taking a knee? That's a sign of reverence, isn't it?
Well, you know, actually, it is intended to be. The taking a knee thing came from Colin Kaepernick was put into contact with via one of his assistant coaches with this military veteran who was really upset with him. And so he talked – I don't know if he called him or they met or whatever. And this veteran explained that he appreciated – He whether or not he agreed with it, he understood that Kaepernick had this political beef, but he felt like sitting during the anthem was disrespect to the flag, and that had more to do with like soldiers than police and yada yada, you know, whatever they talked about it. But anyway, so this Kaepernick said, "Oh, you know what? I kind of see your point or whatever. What do you think I should? Well, you know, and I don't know if it was this guy's idea or then Kaepernick's subsequent idea was that he would take.
I think it was Tim Tebow's idea actually.
Well, Tim Tebow patented praying, or sorry, he copyrighted praying. So let's never forget that grand moment and money changers in the temple. But so the knee thing was intended to essentially clarify, but in a weird way. Not in a weird way. It was intended to tone down and to be a more toned down version of sitting on the bench. So you're actually correct, I think.
Which is also, you know, Kaepernick is doing too much of anyway. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have any problem with Kaepernick doing it. I don't.
Sitting on the bench, I meant.
Oh, right. Yeah, well, yeah, that's what he does now. He's a backup.
And you know, it's people are acting like it's like people are outraged. I haven't really seen any outrage since people started taking a knee.
No, the knee thing really has calmed the outrage down, even though it's also sort of spread the sentiment. But here's my thing, and here's the reason to me it's a big fat zero. First off, you should never – anything that – you should never be too angry about a symbolic loss or too happy about a symbolic victory. Symbolism is not real. It's worth something, but so is a penny. But the main reason, the particularly with like the kids doing it, is like the kids taking a knee and joining the protest is really no different than the kids standing up. They're just following what some adults that they look up to told them to do. It's essentially just another routine they're going through. When you're a kid, your entire life is a series of rituals and things that you don't really understand that people make you do, that you get some small choice in. And this is just another minor one. I don't see it as any different than when you pledge allegiance to me. It's all. Is anybody really sitting there thinking about the history of the country, or are you just, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America? You know.
No. It's just rote. Like the one of the best gags in Christmas Vacation.
Yes.
Is where the yes. aunt is asked to say grace, and she mixes together about five different things that people do by rote.
Yeah, right. And I think – and then she even adds play ball to the end of the
– yeah.
I love that Cousin Eddie stands up and puts his hand over his heart like nobody else does, but Cousin Eddie like really gets your attention over it. Yeah, it's just a habit. And I always thought in 1984 it was a much more insidious and interesting idea when they do the 5 minutes hate. Because, like, to actually conjure hate up while they show these images would, like, have some effect. But just to, like, recite something, it just becomes a bunch of syllables. It's like some kid in Hebrew school who's, like, reciting the Hebrew, but he's doing it phonetically. And he doesn't speak Hebrew, you know? He's just... that's why, to me, it's the debate is not much of a debate, even though the real debates were quite the debates.
And on that confusing note... I think we're just about to the end of the segment here.
Yeah.
Thank you all. Thank you all for tuning in or downloading or however you did this. TimSlegel.com, of course, where all the episodes are.
Yep.
On iTunes and
BrianMillerCounty.com and Real Brian Miller on Twitter with a Y. And 2 weeks from now, there'll be a whole other set of debates to talk about.
And maybe next week we'll have that bet squared away.
Oh yeah, and Halloween talk coming up. Hot Halloween talk is imminent.
Catch us next week.